Well, the Parliament is in chaos. Royal commissions have upended our faith in churches and our trust in the banks and the business sector. The online world routinely erupts in abuse and anger. Australia seems as angry as the rest of the world right now. For half a century, social researcher Hugh Mackay has tried to understand Australia's collective anxiety and to build bridges. His latest and final book of social analysis is Australia Reimagined. I caught up with Hugh in the cafe at the National Library in Canberra.
If you look at societies that we would compare ourselves with, New Zealand, the US, Canada, Germany, the UK, Scandinavia, France, these are all societies where religious observance is in decline and often very sharp decline. The lowest church attendance in the world is in Scandinavian countries. But the big picture is that the overwhelming majority of the world's people do identify with one of the four great world religions, Christianity, Islam, Hinduism, and Buddhism. So that's the big picture, and that's growing. It's not as though that's shrinking. And even in Australia, where it looks as though the trend is going in the opposite direction, that's a complicated story too, because you can't say church attendance is the definitive indicator of whether people have some religious faith or sympathy with religious faith or, for example, Christian values. How will we account for the fact that while church attendance is going through the floor, enrolments at church-based schools are going through the roof? So there are a lot of parents who are saying, well, I don't particularly want to be involved in religious observance myself, but I want my kids to be exposed to Christianity in some form, not necessarily to get religion, in quotes, but certainly to be exposed to the culture and the values of the Christian religion. So,
sort of the instrumental value of religion there.
Yes.
So what sort of values are we talking about, though? Because you address these in Australia Reimagined.
Yes. When people talk about Christian values, this is a bit of a conundrum. They're often just talking about what we would normally think of as Western values, things like observance of the rule of law and charity and tolerance and so on. And they are Western values because the Western religious tradition is Christianity. So it's not very surprising that when you look at countries with that cultural heritage, the values look like Christian values. But still, when parents are saying we want our children to be exposed to those values, I think what they're saying is we want a bit more explicit instruction. And it's a complicated point, Andrew, but somewhere just below the surface, there is this phenomenon which I've tried to describe in the new book, which I call faith envy.
Yes.
Which is people who don't have it but wish they did, or once had it and wish they could get it back, or occasionally meet someone with strong religious faith and they find that person attractive, or feel that in the community the presence of people of faith is a beneficial thing, reflected in the fact that something like 90% of non-churchgoers say they like having a church in their local neighbourhood or town.
How much has the question of the clerical sex abuse crisis, you do refer to it in your book, but it remains this sort of pall that hangs over the face of established religion in Australia. Did you find that people were making a distinction between the Christian religion and the institutional church that was so clearly responsible for these failures?
I think that is a really important distinction, and people do make it. When you use the word religion, it's one reason why religion is a dangerous word, in spite of the fact that it's in the title of your program, because it does have these two quite different connotations. An institution which is obsessed with its hierarchies of power, inward-looking, self-protective, wealthy, has some of the arrogance of power, even the corruption of power that we associate with individuals, but also with institutions, dogmatic, judgmental, all those things people would say about institutional religion in the West. at the moment. But if you say religion and imply the faith of the individual, a person attempting to lead, let's say, a Christian life, or a Buddhist life, or a Muslim life, that kind of judgment bordering on despair evaporates. People who are completely antithetical to institutional religion in general and the Christian church as an institution in particular may still be entirely sympathetic and admiring of the faith of the individual believer.
You talk a lot about diversity because it is just an inescapable fact of 21st century Australia. You say that people have every right to critique another person's belief system, but they don't have a right to mock that belief system. In concrete terms, what is the difference?
The difference is that the critique can be done kindly and with respect. And that, by the way, is my definition of compassion, that we behave kindly and with respect towards other people, whereas mocking is disrespectful. I'm all in favour of free speech, but the limit to free speech in my mind is very clear. It is that we are free to speak as long as we speak with respect. And so I think in a way that is the mark of the civilised society, that we do show kindness and respect towards people we disagree with or dislike, but especially towards people we disagree with on the subject of religion and politics. That's the acid test. If we can behave kindly towards our opponents in politics, and that's a message for our parliamentarians as well as for the rest of us, or towards people whose religious beliefs or lack of religious beliefs position them as on a completely different point on the spectrum from us, kindness and respect towards those people is the mark that we are civilized, that we've got the discipline of compassion integrated into our lives.
It's a challenge in this sense, though, Hugh, that, and you know, having spent a lifetime speaking to tens of thousands of Australians of all different backgrounds, of education, socioeconomic backgrounds, one person's mocking may be simply the less eloquent person's version of the critique, isn't it?
That's very kind of you to put it like that. I think we know the difference. I think when people are determined to put the boot in, to rubbish people, to denigrate them, I think any of us know that that is not an expression of respect. And the Australia that I dream of in my reimagining is a place where we would be as a nation characterized by our willingness to show respect for other points of view. Now, that doesn't mean we embrace other points of view. I mean, one of the things we know, we're talking about diversity in the broader sense, but for example, in the context of ethnic diversity, we know that if people of different ethnicity move into our street, we find that difficult at first. That doesn't mean it shouldn't happen. What it means is that's an extra challenge to us to demonstrate how civil and how compassionate we can be.
How do you reconcile the two really powerful propositions that you put in this book? And it goes to this question that Australia is debating now, not always in the nicest terms. First of all, a diverse society is stronger because the mongrel dog is always better than the thoroughbred. But at the same time, you point to research by Andrew Lee, the Federal Labor MP, but a scholar in his own right, who's found out from his empirical data that countries that are more ethnically diverse have less trust. How do you reconcile the two? Because you've spent a lifetime trying to build bridges of trust and understanding.
The reconciliation happens in our street. It's not a magic wand proposition. There's no magic political wand that can be waved to make this happen. Street by street, apartment block by apartment block, we have to recognise that we create the kind of society we want by living as if it is that kind of society in our own neighbourhood. And for many neighbourhoods, the primary challenge is the one you've just identified. That is, recognising that we're all quite different from each other because of our politics, our ethnicity, our religion, our generation, our level of affluence, or whatever it might be, or our taste in music, for that matter. This is the sign of whether we are committed to a civil society. If we get to know the people across these various divides, what almost always happens is that we learn to trust them. Mm. Trust is something that comes with familiarity. Not always, but mostly. But when you don't know your neighbours, or you regard those people who've just moved in as a bit alien and we'll keep our distance, cross the road to avoid having to talk to them, etc., obviously levels of trust decline. It's in our own hands.
Hugh, I first interviewed you 25 years ago when I was a young newspaper journalist. Your books have always had lots of new, fresh material, but underlying them has always been a consistent message of a more tolerant Australia. Hugh's latest book is Australia Reimagined, Towards a More Compassionate and Less Anxious Society. Hugh Mackay, thank you very much, as always, for being with us on the Religion and Ethics Report.
Great pleasure. Thank you, Andrew.